Los Angeles sunshine coming through.
Please stand by. Prime Video and Westworld director Jonathan Nolan invite you to Fallout.
After 200 years, we don't know much about what's up there. Violence, desperation, lawlessness.
Everyone wants to save the world, they just disagree on how.
We're gonna get across that wasteland, and we're gonna do it together.
Fallout. All episodes available now on Prime Video.
Hey, and welcome to the Short Stuff. I'm Josh. There's Chuck. Dave's here in spirit. So that's a Short Stuff quorum. That's all you need. And this is Short Stuff.
That's right. And we're here to dispel the rumor that Christopher Columbus discovered America.
No. Who knew?
That's so old.
That is pretty old.
Are we really going to talk about that?
No, we don't have to do that. That was definitely a 2008-ish, 2009-ish kind of thing to say.
But what are we going to dispel?
Well, so I think one of the things we should at least say, because not everybody knows this, is like the first Europeans definitively to reach North America were the Vikings. I know a lot of people know that, but not everybody knows that, Chuck.
Not everybody knows that.
There's a Viking settlement that was discovered that I think they suspected for a long time, because I think in the Norse sagas, they basically said, yeah, we made it to Newfoundland, that the Vikings actually had made it to North America. And then finally in the 60s, I think, they found a real deal, bona fide, totally incontrovertible Viking settlement from about 1000 CE at a place called Lanzo Meadows, which I've always wanted to go to, because I've always wanted to go to Newfoundland, for one. But mm-hmm. to see like a Viking settlement in America would just, whew, that'd be something else.
That would be great. We could go berserker.
Right. Take a bunch of shrooms, get a battle axe.
Yeah. And then celebrate the fact that they were the very, incontrovertibly, the very first Europeans
right.
to touch that soil.
And that's,
or were they?
I was going to wrap up Short Stuff. You're right. There is a chance that the Vikings were even beat. So the Vikings would have beat the Age of Exploration by about 500 years. There's a theory, and it's got some legs conceivably, that somebody else beat the Vikings by 500 years themselves, and that sometime in about the 6th century showed up somewhere in North America. And who was that, Chuck?
The Irish. And I don't buy this, but I think it's a great story.
You don't buy it?
No, I think it is folklore.
Okay.
But we'll talk about it anyway, because it is a fun story. But in the 6th century, as the story legend tale goes, St. Brendan was an Irish monk, very good sailor and seafarer.
Very saintly.
Very what? Saily?
Saintly.
Oh, saintly and saily.
Yeah.
Supposedly undertook this voyage, and with some fellow monks, and went looking for paradise, the land of promise of the saints. And after 7 years, came upon what he thought was this place, an island so vast that they did not reach the far shore after 40 days of walking, that had a river that was too wide to be crossed, mm-hmm. a forested wooded land with lush fruits. And he and the fellows filled their boats full of gems and returned home. So the Irish found it first.
Yeah. And I mean, like, if you, like, he ain't talking about the Azores, you can definitely walk across them in 40 days. There's not a lot of islands in between Ireland and North America. So it's really not clear, what St. Brendan was talking about, where he went. And he wasn't like a dummy. He didn't accidentally stumble onto Europe. Like, he'd sailed to Europe before. He was like a skilled navigator.
Mm-hmm.
So he is presumed to have known enough that he knew what direction he was traveling in, and that this really was like an all new place that his kind had never set foot in before.
That's right. And in the 9th century, so several hundred years later, there was an account of this surfaced called Travels of St. Brendan, Navigatio Sancti Brendani.
Magna Carta, Master Charger.
You take the bus, we all take the bus. it was a big hit. It was translated into a bunch of languages. And, it was the account of the journey. There are all sorts of crazy things in here.
Oh, yeah.
Which... maybe we should save that for the second half.
Okay.
Because that's right. Where it falls apart a bit with me.
Okay.
But should we talk a little bit about the Vikings maybe lending some support to this idea?
Sure. Yeah. So the Norths have those sagas that I was talking about, right? Where it's basically like, we did this. This is neat. This is cool. Uh-huh. Here's something else we did. And there's like a lot of, like credulity to it. Like there's, it's not just like Norse mythology. That's almost mm-hmm. like a separate thing, although it's definitely intertwined. Like they think that these are actual like historical documents in a lot of cases, or at least have a large kernel of historicity in them. And so in those sagas, they talk about arriving in Greenland around 1000 CE, around the same time they would have set up the place in Newfoundland, and finding Irish missions that were already there. Well, that's a little odd. And also, we should say the Norse were familiar with the Irish already, so they would have known an Irish mission if they came upon an Irish mission.
Yeah, sure.
So that that would suggest that the Irish beat them to Greenland, at least, which is pretty significant.
Yeah, there was another saga where they talked about meeting some of the Native Americans who already had seen white men. They were like, we know guys like you, and we've encountered guys sort of like you. They were dressed in white, and they came from a land across from their own, or our own, I guess if I'm in character. And then there was a third saga that talks about the Norse encountering a tribe of Native Americans who spoke a language that even sounded like Irish.
Right.
So these, a lot of little clues here.
Yeah, these are recorded by the Norse, and they definitely do suggest that there was possibly some Irish who made their way over to the New World before the Vikings even did. But like you said, there is a lot of, there's a heaping helping of folklore along with all of this. And for people like you, Chuck, it breaks down everything. I like to hold out hope that this is possible and true, and let's talk about it a little more after these commercial breaks.
Hey everybody, it's halftime and the scoreboard is not looking good. You're feeling low and not sure you can pull out a win, and that's when you have to dig deep, lift your head up, and say to yourself, time to get back in the game. Pull off some bank heists and take as much of your friends' money as you possibly can.
That's right. The smash hit mobile game Monopoly Go lets you compete with your friends to get the most riches and the biggest empire. It's the Monopoly you love, but on your phone, anytime, with tons of new twists, including leaderboards to compare your progress to your buddies.
That's right. You can play on countless dynamic Monopoly boards. You can make your friends bankrupt by smashing their landmarks with a wrecking ball. And you can charge other players rent for your iconic properties.
Plus, you can even work with your friends to crack open community chests in tournaments to get rewards and climb the leaderboard.
So get back out there, put on your game face, and download Monopoly Go, now free on the App Store or Google Play.
And now a word from the show's sponsors at Betterment. Let's talk about hustle culture, shall we? You know, the whole rise and grind, go big or go home thing. It's a lifestyle that might not be for you.
That's right, but one that your money can handle thanks to Betterment. Betterment is the automated investing and savings app that makes your money hustle.
How? Good question. Their automated technology optimizes your investments again and again. With Betterment, your money is taking ice baths at 5 a.m. while you get your well-deserved rest. Your money downs protein smoothies and automatically reinvests your dividends, all before you head out the door. Your money is a workaholic.
But you don't have to be, because you've got Betterment, the automated investing and savings app that makes your money hustle. So visit Betterment.com to get started. Investing involves risk. Performance is not guaranteed. All right. We're in a divided camp.
Uh-huh. House divided.
This is when the petroglyph comes in. Barry Fell, who is a marine biologist at Harvard University, mm-hmm. found some petroglyphs, which are rock-carved writings, in West Virginia in 1983. And he said, you know what these are? This is Ogham script. This is an Irish alphabet, and it was used from the 6th to the 8th century, and I even think I know what it's saying. They're talking about the Christian nativity.
Sure. What else are you going to write on a rock?
Sure. And that's Irish, clearly. It's not, you know, from Native Americans. And Fell said, here, everyone, take a look at this stuff. And the academic world said, I don't know about that. I don't even know if this, I don't know about your methods. This is definitely not a fact.
They said, aren't you a marine biologist?
Yeah, exactly. And this could be Ogham script, but it's really not proving anything.
No. So the it's still not definitively been shown who wrote that. It's called the Horse Creek Petroglyphs near Clear Fork, West Virginia. And they don't know who wrote it, but I think the local archaeological society came out and said, it's pretty racist to assume that rather than the local indigenous people leaving these petroglyphs, that it was some mythical Irish monk who made his way over here allegedly, rather than the people we know were here in this area at that time.
Yeah.
But regardless of whether that's the case or not, like no one has said, oh, well, it was these people and this is what it says. So there's still definitely room for speculation. But from what I understand, there's virtually no academic who believes that this is, in fact, Ogham script. And even if it is an Ogham, that it doesn't necessarily talk about the nativity. So we can kind of discard that as evidence. Like there's not, certainly not incontrovertible evidence of Irish presence because of that, those petroglyphs.
Yeah. And where it falls apart for me, but not, I've been thinking about it, maybe not completely, is when you start to look at the account, the Navigatio, the Travels of St. Brendan, which was the account of his voyage. It is really out there and wacky. It talks about an island with an Ethiopian devil, an island with monks who celebrated Christmas, who were just there. They fought a griffin at one point and killed a griffin. All kinds of fantastical stuff. They went to one island and set up camp, and then it turned out, oh my goodness, this is not an island. We're actually on a giant whale.
So let's hold communion.
So let's have communion. I don't know if that was where the communion was. It was a bunch of whale stuff, but okay. They definitely held communion on a whale at some point. It might have been that chapter, but it's kind of crazy stuff, and I started looking into it. There were what it is an Irish Imram, which were these 7th and 8th century seafaring adventure tales written by the Irish,
sure.
And it fits in with that. And so I immediately dismissed it. I was like, no, this is just an Imram, and it's, you know, it's just made up. But I thought, well, maybe not. Maybe it took the style of that because that was what was popular, and maybe it really did happen, but it just, they gussied it up with these fantastical tales. They dressed it up.
Yeah, and the Navigatio was written about 200 to 300 years after St. Brendan would have lived.
Right.
So it certainly wasn't his own account of it. But it's almost like, to me, it's almost like Hamilton. Like if you came along and saw Hamilton, the musical, you're like, this is ridiculous. They didn't rap.
Hamilton wasn't a rapper.
Right. You're like, there's a larger point to it in that there was a person named Alexander Hamilton. He did do these things, you know, but is dressed up to make it palatable or understandable to people at the time, and then embellished, I'm sure, although I don't think Alexander Hamilton would have given communion on the back of a whale. But it's still in the same ballpark. And to me, just because somebody came along and dressed it up with folklore, clearly folklore, doesn't mean that it doesn't remove the possibility that there is a lot of kernels of truth still in there somewhere.
Yeah, I kind of got there during the last 8 minutes.
I'm glad about that.
What is interesting is one of the things that they kind of used to say, no, this probably couldn't have happened, was the fact that the sailing technology at the time, the boating technology that he would have likely used, is this little boat called a Curac, and it a C-U-R-R-A-C-H, and it's this, you know, it's a homemade boat, basically made out of wood with an ox hide and like tar and stuff to put it together. And they're like, there's no way this guy could have made it that far in one of these Curacs. And in 1976, an author and adventurer named Tim Severin said, you know what, I'm going to see if this is possible. And he built one of those, supposedly in the style that they would have built them back then. And he retraced that route that Brendan is believed to have taken from Ireland to Iceland, and Greenland and eventually Newfoundland, and he made it.
Yeah.
Like, took him a year.
He showed it is entirely possible. And again, this St. Brendan was supposed to be a very skilled navigator, so it's possible at least that happened. If St. Brendan actually did exist, who knows?
So like many Stuff You Should Know shorties, this ends with a big shoulder shrug.
A big shoulder shrug, a puffy question mark with a heart for the dot.
Amen.
And by the way, you can read this article that we found on How Stuff Works. I wrote it myself back in the day. And with that, Short Stuff is out.
Stuff You Should Know is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.